Loosen it up.
Hey, everybody. That is Gary Smith.
Hello there.
That is Kaz Kenny.
Kapow!
I am Eddie Bramble, and this is episode 45 of the Blackwater's Edge podcast.
45. Man. That's almost as old as I am. I'm 46. One more, we can have a celebration.
Are you really 46?
You really 46? I'm not answering that. Yeah.
Are you really? I didn't realize that.
I really am. I'm an old son of a bitch, man. Yeah,
man, you old.
I'm just trapped in line. I'm just immature. Yeah, that's all, brother. Man, it's good to be back on here.
Man,
you know
it's
what
been
I mean?
A couple weeks, yeah.
Shoot, couple weeks, man. This whole COVID thing. It's all crazy out here.
What was that?
That was the kapow.
Oh, okay.
I thought
you, like, you know, truck drivers are letting the air out of their breath.
Well, no. Well, see, I can't get any ammo. I can't get any ammo, so I'm using air cartridges now. You know what I mean? How about that, man? Everything's like getting like nuts out here, isn't it, man? People are losing their mind. Things are going crazy. I think everybody just needs to go fishing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So. Oh, the animals. Animals are, they're cool.
Yeah. Still doing the same thing. No, I ain't never seen a sick of deer argue politics for. So.
Right? Or a snakehead for that matter, yeah. Right?
Pretty much immune to everything.
Yeah. True story. So, Kaz, why don't you start us off with this?
Well, the fishing's
report.
It's been tough, you know. It's been cold. I mean, but the good news is we've got the sun that's been out the last 2 days. The tide's been down a little bit instead of being so high. And y'all saw my forecast on the snakeheadlife.com page of what I was forecasting.
Yeah, man, what are you doing? You're supposed to save that for the podcast. What are you doing? You're screwing up your fishing report now. That's exclusive data.
That's just giving them a heads up so they can get a jump on it. If I'd have waited to tell them until now, they wouldn't have had 8 hours to get a head start on ordering bait from the bait boys coming down here to get some of these meps. Hey, look, guys, I got to tell you what. We just got the mother load of meps lures, didn't we?
I'm not even sure what's in it. I got to finish checking in the boxes. It's only about half of what I ordered.
It looks like half a tractor trailer load of lures down there. That's all I can say.
It was three pallets. So.
Boxes. Yeah. Boxes.
I can tell you one thing. I know you all might want to check my pockets tonight when I leave to go.
They're empty.
Anyway, let's talk fishing. So, you know, I mean, the most action we've seen here in the last, let's just say, week or so has been mostly perch fishing, you know, as far as the guys that are getting out. Some crappie, you know, cold water fish, you know, that's what we're seeing being caught when it's cold, of course. Everybody's been asking snakeheads, where they at, Kaz? What's going on? It's cold, man. I mean, you don't want to really get off your couch and go outside when it's that cold, you know what I mean? I'd like to just stay where I'm at and be warm, you know? So if snakehead's got a nice spot he's found to be comfortable, he's probably going to stay there until it gets a little warmer outside. So I do think, you know, with all the sun that we've had the last couple of days and, you know, the refraction equation and everything else that goes into that, you know, people that know a dark color, you know, that's
I didn't know you knew that word.
Dude, there's lots of words that I'm finding out that I know here recently that I didn't even know that I knew.
Yeah, there's lots of words you use.
How about this one? Ornithorhynchus paradoxus. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't.
Ornithorhynchus paradoxus. That is the scientific name for the duck-billed platypus.
No kidding.
Google it. So anyway,
I will. I'll make sure.
You guys are speechless right now. I just figured out how to get you guys quiet. Pretend I'm smart.
You caught me off guard on that one, but I will fact check you on that one later.
Okay. But no, but really, I mean, it's mostly cold water fishing that we're seeing. The guys that are netting perch, I mean, they're seeing some really, really nice perch. So we know that we're getting ready to see some nice perch here in some of the rivers here on the Eastern Shore. I did get a picture of a nice net picture the other day of some yellow perch, which kind of blew my mind to see those kind of numbers. Unfortunately, I had to go back because that was in the Nanticoke River, and you can't keep them out of the Nanticoke River. So, but it was just really nice to see some big yellow perch. So for those guys that are chasing cold weather fish here on the Eastern Shore, meaning yellow perch, some white perch, crappie, bluegill, panfish basically, and chain pickerel. Look, let me talk about chain pickerel. The state record is from here on the Eastern Shore. I know where it's from. I know who caught it. You know, I was fishing there that same week that it was caught. So this is the time of the year that you're going to catch a really nice chain pickerel. If you want to get that, you know, button pickerel off of your list, you know, you want that 30-inch fish, I mean, this is the time of year you're going to find it. You know, they're getting in that spawning mode. You know, they need to eat. They need to be healthy. They're not afraid to chase down a bait. So they can be a lot of fun for us. You know what I'm saying?
It's amazing what a little sunshine does.
I know, right?
I mean, I had my bass were all up around the edge of the pond today. Haven't seen any swirls. I went by there tonight, and one of them actually jumped when I walked up on the pond.
I told you, I think we're going to pay a little visit.
Yeah, I got to put my no trespassing signs up again.
God damn it. You guys are horrible. But so really, let's talk about fishing. Get on with this shit thing here. God. So yellow perch in the Marshy Hope, you know, or Marshy Hope River. Crappie in the Marshy Hope River. White perch are starting to come in the Marshy Hope River. Plenty of chain pickerel over in the Marshy Hope River. You might be lucky and find some snakeheads. You might be lucky and find a nice bass or two. So don't be afraid to look over there. Here locally, as far as we're concerned, here at the refuge, it's been pretty much a few crappie, some bass, snakeheads, of course, for those guys that are getting out and putting in time. Blue catfish. Let's talk about some blue catfish. So the Nanticoke right now is just loaded with big blue catfish, and they've moved up into a lot of the feeder creeks, and you can find them, you know, at the mouth or on the outside, you know, of those feeder creeks or just inside those feeder creeks, you know, looking for a meal. And if you know how to look inside these creeks for the holes and how they look on a fish finder, you know, you can probably find them. And if you have questions about blue cats, not to get off subject, but you might want to talk to David Confair, you know, over there, because he can put you on some blue cats, and they're catching some pretty big ones over there. White perch in the Honga River, the guys I'm talking to here, white perch up in the Chester, they're catching a few rockfish. We've seen some really, really big rockfish here lately in the nets, you know, talking to some of the guys, and I've seen some of the pictures, and I mean some cows, man. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not sure why we're seeing so many of them, but it's kind of early to see them like this up in these coves and, in these rivers, you know, but, they're already moving back in the river. So I don't know what that's all about. Talked to some guys up at Peach Blossom, a few white perch, a few yellow perch, some bass, a couple snakeheads, not many. What else? Y Mills. I talked to some guys there a while. Y Mills. They said that there's some crappie there, some bluegill there. Not seeing many yellow perch. So, again, here's the second year in a row second, now.
That's just about to say that.
That they're not coming back. So, we need to figure out why, you know, which I think
we know why.
We know why, but, I mean, the bottom line is they're just not coming up there. And that's really, really a crucial spot and a crucial area of run for the yellow perch. So, thing you have to keep in mind is these perch can't get to where they need to be to successfully reproduce and lay their eggs on the roots and lay their, you know, rocks and things like that. If they're letting them eggs go way out in a cove somewhere that's not you know, conducive to reproduction, they're not gonna reproduce. And that's what we're worried about is happening right there in Wine Mills. So we're paying attention to that, looking at that. Up the bay, I'm hearing some good stuff. And our guest today, I'm sure we can ask some questions about fishing up there. So we'll get into that, you know, once we get the show going. What else? I want to talk about real quick before we get going. I'll talk about baits later on. Let's get talking about some safety. Let's get talking about some other stuff. So
that's right.
As far as fishing goes, man, bottom line, you don't know if you don't go. So, I mean, you get 3 days, you can kill it in a ditch down here on a frog in February. You catch it at the right time, and that's no bullshit, pardon my French. So,
yep. Well, it's just like this morning. My pond was frozen this morning almost completely over. And 3 o'clock this afternoon, the bass are up on the edges.
Gary doesn't know this, but I got
my
cousin Ricky bringing my ice hut down and my Vexilar and my ice fishing poles.
You don't need an ice hut for there.
He's going to get up in the morning and see me out there in the middle with my hut up, big lantern, bonfire on the side of his pond, 5 of my friends out there doing some YouTube shit, right?
If you try to put that ice hut out on that pond, you're going to be underwater with the bass.
And so next week, Kaz will be standing up to let me out on him. He'll be walking for a couple days.
Your dog is something else from wherever they're fishing. I can't lie, man. You turn your back, man, and you're not paying attention. That dog will eat the fish and the lure too, man. You know, you'll get a second bite if you ain't looking, you know. So,
all right. So, well, with that, I think we'll get right into this week's guest. So this week we've got Roy Boyd on here from Westside Snakes. Roy, how you doing, man?
Great. How are you guys?
Good. Shame you couldn't be here with us today. We've got you on the phone, so that's okay. But so why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself real quick?
Been fishing in Susquehanna, Upper Bay, basically since I grew up, literally. I kayaked canoed for years growing up, Boy Scouts and things like that all over the place. Family always fished at Conowingo Dam. I mean, I was up there in a car seat with my parents. that's no joke. There's pictures, you know, before everything happened.
I can back it up.
Fishing off the catwalk, and it's just special place, man. I moved into kayak fishing 11 years ago. I got onto a feel free fishing team last year, which was just a life goal for me.
That's a pretty good accomplishment. I don't want to cut you off there, Roy, but you know, congratulations on that feat. That's something that you should be very proud of. Sorry, continue.
I don't know. I mean, I'm basically at this point, I started lower Susquehanna fishing page, couple of years ago at this point, just kind of fishing, talking with people after whatever happened, and started west side snakes, just to, obviously for the obvious reason, snakeheads moved to the west side, and that just took off. And now that's like kind of my passion now. Is, I mean, I love the Susquehanna, I love every fish that's there, but something about those snakehead and hunting them down, it's absolutely incredible.
Well, I can tell you, I've known you for 30 years, if not more. I think I've known you since I was 15.
I think it's probably more at this point.
Yeah, so... Yeah, you know, little history with me and Roy. You know, I know Roy is Butch, so if I say that several times, that's what we knew each other as teenagers. And to give a little history there with me and him, we were both little skate rats back in the early 90s, and we also found out that between the two of us that we had a passion for fishing. That's really kind of how we made the connection. And I don't know. I know I was in high school still, and Roy was out of school. He was working for, if I remember correctly, the place was called Summit Electric, and it was the ugly-ass blue van, if I remember that, that you drove
yes,
was
sir.
All rusted out. And I can tell you that I think me and you probably met on a Thursday, and by Friday, we were best friends, you know? I mean, I can kind of remember it being like that, you know?
Your memory is better than mine, but
which is amazing, because everybody knows me knows I've done a lot of drugs, so anyway.
No, man.
Yeah, I mean, so to give you the history, like, I would cut school. And Roy would call out of work. He'd call in sick, you know. And he'd come pick me up, and then he'd take me over to Edgewood Bowl, and we'd go skateboarding. Well, I wasn't supposed to go to Edgewood Bowl, so this all had to be like top secret reconnaissance missions, you know what I mean? So my mom loves Butch, you know, when we first meet, and we're all coming around. She thinks he's great, and then she finds out all this sneaky stuff that we're doing, you know what I mean? So then she wasn't sure what to make of anything. So then I decided it would probably be best to keep Butch away from my house and started spending the nights over at his house. And oh my God, it just went from there. And I can tell you, I know we can talk about lots of stuff. Atkinson Dam. We can talk about the Bush River. We can talk about, like you said, Conowingo Dam. I can talk about spending 3 days getting dropped off on a Friday afternoon and staying there with Mr. Bill all weekend in my sleeping bag, you know, on the catwalk. I mean, that's what we did back then, you know?
Yeah.
And to look and to watch and to see where you've came, your family and everything, man, it's just amazing because you and me both know that if we look back at the group of guys that we were all running with, you know, it's kind of like this. Look to your left, look to your right. Only one of you are going to be here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Who's still here?
Right.
You know, it's like I'm so privileged just to talk to you still.
I know,
like,
right?
You don't. No, seriously, brother, on both aspects, mine and yours.
Well, I know Atkinson Dam. I mean, we spent just days there fishing.
God.
Winter's Run, you know, I mean, all that stuff. You know, I think the coolest thing back then was that that kind of saved us from where a lot of our other friends did go in the directions that they took. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why I want to say, you know, I'm still here, you're still here, but there's a lot that we can count on our hands that aren't still here, you know?
Yeah. And just not to interrupt you, but where I just keep completely share is I keep that in the back of my head that we've both seen enough that it's, if one person just wants to go fishing and get out, I share invite anybody because it's not about the fish. It's about that. If I can push that on, I love getting beat by people fishing.
Yeah, I mean,
love it.
I think the emotional connections that we're making are what's most important, you know, the meaningful connections, you know,
community.
The community, the friendships. I mean, the meaningful stuff that's going on, you know. And I'm honored to be part of it. I know you're honored to be part of it. And I think that a lot of things are going to happen here. But I think that the biggest thing that we want to talk about today is something that you, in my eyes, and I know nobody's an expert, but in my eyes, if I have safety questions or if I'm concerned about cold water fishing or if I need some answers, you know, I thought that this would be an opportune time to bring you out here and let's talk about staying safe while we're out there on the water in our kayak, or no matter what we are out there on the water, you know, what are some things that you can suggest to people here that are new to the sport, that are getting the kayak, you know, talk about the communities that they can join over there that you can help them with, you know, and things like that. But let's start talking a little bit about how to be safe while we're on the water.
Okay. First and foremost, the 120 degree rule, and you'll hear it again and again. Air temperature, water temperature. If it hits 120 degrees, it's unsafe to be out there in normal clothing. Period. Done. Settled. It's either dry suit conditions, you know, so if the water's 60, the air temp's 60, you go in, you're in danger. You go in in normal clothing, you're in danger. It's just something I'm like passionate about.
Yeah, that's a good little comment.
Now, let me ask you something. When you start talking about water temperature, and let's talk about danger zones. When are we getting into the danger zone when we really need to say, okay, no more of my sweatpants and my three sweatshirts. I need to start looking into a suit.
Honestly,
a suit that you're describing.
A suit. We can get into the suits, and there's a few options. I mean, the dry suits are pricey. Basically, combine the air temperature and the water temperature and think about it. It's 120 degrees. So if the water is 60, it's 60 degrees outside, you fall in. Obviously, in those temperatures, right at the borderline 120, you're going to be, you'll probably be okay, if you're around people, something like that. But you are in danger. As those temperatures, that number drops, you're in insane danger. Last weekend, it was 36 degrees in the Susquehanna.
That's some cold shit.
Literally touching my kayak to load it on my cart. My hands were freezing, which I'm in a dry suit, but my hands were exposed. My hands were hurting within seconds.
Right.
So my big issue with the 120 degree rule is we get those days, okay, the water is 40 degrees, but we get a 80 degree winter warm-up.
Bingo. You just hit that nail on the head.
So you fall in the water, and the water is still 36 degrees. So that 120 degree rule goes out the window. You fall in 30 or 40 degree water, your first reflex when you hit the water is going to be a gasp reflex. You're going to suck that 40 degree water into your body. So it's not just, oh, I can go floating around in this water. And I shared you guys some pictures.
Yeah.
The guy's floating. He wasn't immersed. He didn't go underwater. He went out and floated around testing his suit. When you fall in, your first reflex is you're going to panic.
Sure.
You're going to gasp air. You're going to try and save yourself. You're going to suck 40 degree water into your lungs. So then your body temperature drops drastically. You have to be concerned about this.
Here's the thing I want to throw back at you. I hear you on the pricey thing, but I mean, realistically, me and you both know
there's no price,
it's priceless to save your life. You know what I mean? So if I've got to spend $1,000 to stay out of the morgue, I mean, that's what I'm going to spend.
Well, if it works once, you've already made your money back.
What are you talking price-wise for one?
Honestly, dry suit start. There was a really great company, Mythic. They went out of business. I think they were bought out and pushed out of the market. They were coming in at $300. You can basically, if you look around a guy's shop around, you can find something $400 basic and all the way up. I mean, so I'm in a Gore-Tex suit. My main one thing I really want to point out is the cheaper the suit, if you're going to be in a dry suit, try and spend the money for something with a relief zipper, because if you have to go to the bathroom in a dry suit on the water, that zipper, that extra $200 for that zipper is going to be priceless. Trust me.
Yeah. You ever watch those videos? Going to fall overboard trying to get Mr. Winky. He's all shrinkled up.
You ever watch those videos of the old anybody who's ever played Batman? The first thing I always say to make sure there's a zipper in the suit, because you're shooting 12 hours a day in that Batman suit. Boy, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I mean,
so suits didn't cost you as much as a emergency room visit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a good point.
But there's also another option. Basically, when you buy a suit, if you buy one with latex seals, they're easy to replace. I've replaced my suits. I got my suits used. I've replaced my seals 3 or 4 times. It's actually quite easy. It's about $50 to replace every seal in the suit. Another option, instead of just going out in denim jeans and whatever, is you can get waders and you can buy a dry top. If you have a pair of waders, buy a dry top. It's better than nothing.
Waders, you're meaning something like a neoprene, not something that's open that's going to fill with water, right?
Yeah, well, you can put a wader belt on. I mean, it's still.
I didn't think about that. I could use a belt.
You wear your wader belt. I mean, I know a few guys that do it. I'm not saying it's the best. I always will push dry suit. Spend the money. You can spend the money up front. You have it for years. I've had mine 7 years now, I think. It's you spend that money up front, yeah, but it expands your season throughout the year.
So the suits that you're talking about, these dry suits, because like ice fishing, like I have what's called a float suit, you know, a clam float suit. And this suit, the way that it is if I go in the water, it literally, if I was to fall down straight, it almost catapults me back up as the air hits that leg area. You know what I mean? Like I've never gone below my waist when I've hit the water, believe it or not, or gone through the ice in this suit. So it's a really, like you said, it was very expensive. I looked at a lot of suits and just like you said, I've got friends that bought the lower grade clam suits and they're pissed that they spent the money. You know what I mean? They should have spent the extra $200 and got the suit that I got. You know what I'm saying? So these suits that you have, they're all one piece suits. You know, I'm just trying to have a visual in my face here, you know, for the other people that are watching.
You're in a waterproof pajama jumper. Now here's the issue. There's no liner. So the suit itself just keeps water off your body. That's another thing I want to really bring up is what you wear under the suit. Right. All the suit does is keep you dry. It's not I've had questions. I've been around.
It's not insulated.
Screaming this. No, it's not insulated. It basically just keeps water off of you. So a huge thing I really want to push is the lining you wear underneath. They have what they call bunny suits. So you want to, they're fleece. It's basically a liner that you slip on, looks basic, just like a bunny suit.
Like PJs, I got you. Me too, dude. I want a bunny suit.
I get cold quick.
And you really want to keep cotton off of you. It's, you know, cotton absorbs water. It doesn't moisture wick. You want to stay fleece or wool. Your lining underneath your dry suit is extremely important. Like I said, there's multiple suits. If you don't have the cash and you want to go the wader route, that's fine. You know, if you want to go a dry suit without a relief zipper, that's on you if you got to go to the bathroom. But you're still safer than going out without anything because when you fall in, it's dangerous.
What's the thing that bikers use when they're out here doing these triathlons?
I don't think that's the same thing.
They can pee or something while they're riding. Don't they have something that they use or something?
I think they just use their water bottles.
Oh. I don't know. I thought somebody told me because I asked somebody about the Iron Man thing.
It's
like,
not cold. It doesn't matter.
How do you keep riding 20 miles or 50 miles without peeing? And the guy was like, I got a thing you wear and not just peeing it while I'm riding. I was like, that's gross. That. And I walked away. I was like, really?
Yeah, that's not for me.
Okay,
another big point is life vests. Like even in the summer, 100 degree days, I'm 100%. If somebody's coming with me, you're wearing a vest all day. I don't care if it's an inflatable. I don't care if it's, you know, hot and sweaty. That's a PFD. Like I shared a post a couple days ago. 16-year-old kid.
Yep, I saw was that. Out. I saw
lost
that.
His life. Well, not lost his life. They're still searching for his body. No right. PFD on. You know, it's you get in trouble. I can push the dry suit as much as I want. At least wear your PFD. At least your body will float. At least, you know, it's people are coming to search for you.
Well, I mean, I gotta be honest. I've already learned like so much from just what little bit you've shared so far that's unreal. You know what I mean? And I think it's important because we know that in the next couple of weeks, we're gonna have some cold spots here, man. You know,
PFD is not gonna save your life.
That's right.
The thing. I mean, it'll help and find you. My wife's father passed away on Thanksgiving Day when she was 4 years old, and he went for a boat ride, struck something. Yeah. The boat was sinking. He put his PFD on, and they found him floating. He died of hypothermia.
Mm.
But nobody knew where he was, and he searched the next day for the boat, and they found him and the boat.
Yeah, I mean,
that's why that dry suit's so important.
That's what gets me is, you know, it's the dry. It's there's a void. There's even though you're going to put some money up, I agree. You know, it's but guys. I mean, honestly, the guys I'm fishing with are on kayaks, or we're in $4,000 kayaks by the time they're rigged out.
Right.
The price for a suit, your life is priceless.
Right.
You know, you add that up, and even a suit, like I said, the waders, you know, a suit without a relief zippers, that I can find those for $300-$400. It's you pull over to shore and take a leak. You know, it's your life is way more important. I've seen pictures from this weekend. People goes pickerel fishing, no life vest, in jeans.
I saw them too. Yep.
And you flip over, you know, it's, not only are you putting your life in danger, but you're putting everybody that's going to come rescue. I talk to the water rescue guys on the Susquehanna. I know what they go through.
Right.
Like, you're bringing out, you know, the helicopter searching for your bodies. They're still searching for the guy that his truck went over the bridge at Chesapeake Bay Bridge. Yeah, they're searching for his body.
Yeah.
You know, but there's other people out in danger looking for you, just not being prepared. Not saying the truck driver was not prepared, obviously.
Right. Yeah, that's
a whole different situation. But there's avoidable conflict, you know, we can do.
I totally agree. And the monetary cost behind the accident, what it's costing for the municipalities to get involved in the search and to do all this looking. So, yeah, man, I mean, I'm with you 100%. I mean, that suit's worth its weight in gold, and there really isn't a price on it. I agree with you 100%. That's a point that you should drive home every time to everybody, is that, you know, how much is your life worth? You know what I mean? Your life's got to be worth something.
Yeah, it's the same way with hunting.
Yeah.
People climbing up stuff that's been there 2 and 3 years with old straps on it and stuff. I change my straps out almost every year.
Every year.
Yep. Right. Or that rotten plywood at the bottom of the stand.
So we've talked about how to keep our bodies safe. I mean, as far as my hands, my face, you know, when I'm out there and I'm fishing and I'm getting wet, I mean, what do you suggest for these guys as far as like gloves and ways to handle fish successfully out there in the cold? Because you know you're going to be using your hands. You know you're going to be grabbing fish.
Yep.
You know, if you're any good at fishing anyway. No, I'm just kidding. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, you're going to be grabbing stuff. So we got our suit. What other things do we need to have in that, let's just say, survival kit?
Okay. So survival kit, I carry everything, space blanket. You know, I'm CPR trained purposely for that reason because I'm in fighting. As far as gloves, like police gloves, you can buy waterproof, you know, neoprene gloves. I use police ones. They seem to get wet, but they still absorb the heat and don't get your hands cold. I just use the fingerless, basically the ones like basically a muff. They got the fingerless. You can flip the muff down. I use those.
Are you a neoprene guy? I mean, what is your preference as far as material that you want to use on your hands?
Neoprene's good. Fleece is good. You don't want cotton. You know, wool is good. I mean, the neoprene gloves are great. I use neoprene boots over my dry suit. That's another thing, is like wool socks under my suit. And I wear basically a dive boot is what I wear over my feet.
I'll tell you a little trick a guy taught me a couple of years ago down here when I was fishing. You know those what are they called? Hot hands? Is that what they're called?
Yep. Okay. Hot hands on your toes.
Yes. Okay. Yep. So here's what I learned. You can do with them. You can actually take them out of the package, right?
Okay.
And throw them into a Ziploc bag, squeeze all the air out of it, and seal it, and they do not activate. But they're open and they're available and they're dry. If you follow what I'm saying. You know, if you're out there on the boat and you're trying to tear them open with your hand, you know, you're getting that pack wet, you know. So this guy showed me, you know, he's like, yeah, man. He's like, look, this old trick I learned. He's like, you know, if you fall, you know, you get wet or anything like that, you know, you got these Ziploc bags with 10 of these hand warmers in it. You just open the bag up, shake a little bit of air in there, zip it back up, seal it up, throw it in your pocket, throw it down your pants, wherever you're cold, you know, get yourself warm back up. If you're, you know, cold down your pants, throw them down there, you know. No, I'm just kidding.
And they make a...
But that was a trick that this guy, and I never knew that, you know, you can take this hot hands and hold it out here in the air, and the minute you put it back in that bag, it'll stay warm, but it deactivates it. It's not activating the heat anymore. It's trapping
it's
the
air
heat.
That makes them...
Yeah.
Big. Like if you're sitting in a stand, you got them in your boots.
Yeah.
And you put your foot up on the footrest and you just leave it there. It'll start to get cold. You got to move around a little bit, wiggle your
toes. That's what I'm saying. If you had 4 or 5 of these bags, which is what this guy was showing me, and I'm like, really? You got 4 bags? And he's like, yeah, watch this. And all 4 bags took up an area that was probably, you know, a good foot by foot anyway, you know what I mean? Mm. And, you know, he's sitting there, he's like, yeah, you can just touch yourself, you know, get yourself warm, you know? I'm like, I don't know, man. I mean, I hope it never comes to that, you know? But I just thought it was a really neat tip that a lot of people didn't know about that I told to, you know, and that's something that you could do. You could take 10 of them, put them in a Ziploc bag, roll them up in that Ziploc bag, throw them in your survival kit, and you've got that too. So if you need some heat somewhere, you know what I mean?
And you can buy clothing now. Mm-hmm. Like I've got a
Clavius
or whatever they call it, a hat.
Balaclavus.
Yeah, I've got one that's got slots on both mm-hmm. of the ears, and one in the back and yep. one in the front.
Well, they make
you can shove them right into.
They make the hot hands in the shape of like foot inserts too. The shoe inserts, so it's like it won't even be uncomfortable. It's the same shape as your foot now too.
Yeah. That was just something that I thought of. You know what I mean?
Yeah, hot hands work great.
So as far as body protection outside the suit, I mean, a neoprene, don't use cotton. Is that what you said? Don't use cotton?
Yeah, no cotton. Cotton will absorb water, and it does not it's no moisture wicking, so it's just going to suck the body heat out of your body. You want wool, fleece, moisture wicking material underneath your suit, or even on the outside, even your hat.
What other things can you think of that we can add to our kayak or to our canoe for safety in the cold time? Anything else that you think of that we should talk about there?
Two major things. VHF handheld radio. It's another, 70 to whatever you want to spend.
It's priceless.
You can get ones with GPS, whatever, probe lock. But it is literally, I fish with six guys regularly.
You got a hell of a crew, I know that.
I trust them guys with my life. If they're going, we're going. That's how it goes. If they're not going, I don't go.
Right.
Like, literally, when I say the crew, it's just, they're my brothers. Like, on the water, they're my brothers. But a VHF radio, you can get a standard Horizon radio for $80. It's priceless. It honestly is. You can reach out. I've been out by the Key Bridge. Boat guys hears on the radio talking, oh, my battery's dead, which it wasn't an issue. We were just joking around because there's six of us and everybody has extra batteries. And boat guys are radioing us, you know, do you need help? You can reach out to the Coast Guard. You can reach out to Maryland Police. It's for $70, you know, all year round, it is priceless. It's my radio and my life vest go with me every time. It's basically my life source and coming back. Another thing is a float plan. Tell somebody where you're going.
I like that.
We in cold water, we keep the buddy system as much as possible. It's, you know, if it's not at least two of us, we're not going. But at least tell somebody, write it down, send an email, make a post on Facebook. I'm going here, or I'm headed this direction, whatever.
Yeah, that's what we always say here. You know, if you're going out by yourself anywhere, whether it's hunting, fishing, hiking, exploring, whatever, make sure you tell a friend. You know
I mean, there's big waters, and, you know, it's these currents, you know, people might not think they're big. You go on the Susquehanna, and they dump water. You're getting flushed. I mean, plain and simple, you're getting flushed. You might end up down there in Blackwater.
Don't worry, we'll get you. Come on.
Roy, have you ever had to use your stuff? Been in a bad situation?
No, I've been doing... I know my limits. I'm not going to be cocky about that, but I know my limits. I know I walk... There's been times I walk to the water, and I'm like, I'm going home. And the guys I go with... I'll be honest. I'll be straightforward on it. There's been times that I go and people leave and say, that's beyond what I can do. And we go catch fish and it's no hard feelings. It's, you know, it was beyond their limits. That's my thing. Is just understand what you're capable of doing. You know,
that's very good. I noticed Josh Cofield here. He's watching. He just wrote on there, I always send a pin to the missus. I'm wondering if he can send us a pin for some flatheads. But no, so we've got a plan. I mean, what else can you think of? I mean, should I pack some food with me in case I get stranded somewhere? What about hydration? I mean, anything like that I need to worry about?
I always bring water. I carry a little first aid kit. I have a space blanket. There's aluminum space blankets.
Yep.
I'm CPR trained, so I carry my CPR stuff with me. But that's, if you're not CPR trained, don't carry that with you. Don't try it. But yeah, I carry a little, you know, space blanket, extra water bottle, just in case. I mean, we usually go out like half day trips. So we're not out all day, everything, food, water. We kind of stay local. I mean, you know, the Upper Bay areas of water systems, we're kind of running, gunning, but yeah, you want to be prepared. You want to be prepared for your conditions and your location.
I know Gary asked you, have you been in any situations? Have you been in a situation where you were at the right place, the right time, and you were able to help out somebody else? And could you tell us maybe what happened during that situation?
Honestly, really, no. I mean,
good. Well, that's a great answer then.
We've had, you know, a couple guys in Joppa Town on a boat get high-rised on one of those little low spots, and we towed them out with our kayaks. But other than that, no. Okay. Which I'm happy for, because
that's good now.
Yeah. I mean, I was just curious, you know. I mean, the best way to help people is by experience, you know what I mean? And while I'm thinking about it, Eddie, why don't you tell everybody who they can contact about getting any kind of replica mounts that they need made with these snakeheads? Hold on, Roy, while we pause for a little plug.
This is made by Barry Taylor. He charges $20 an inch. It's about a 6-month turnaround time. He does a fantastic job. It is just a beautiful pattern on that thing. He really did. But you can contact him at 717-577-7437.
All right. So, Roy, so as far as safety goes, is there anything else that we need to talk about as far as safety? Because I want to talk to you a little bit about your adventures up there and some other things, too.
I mean, I think I pretty much covered it. I mean, everybody, you know, you've tagged me in the links. My pages are open. If you have any questions that I didn't cover, ask me. I'm sure somebody will jump in if something I missed, to be honest with you. I had notes. I wrote down everything. I think I covered everything I wrote down. I checked with my guys.
If anybody thinks of any questions as we're going through the podcast about safety, be sure to put something in the comments, and we'll come back to that, you know, absolutely, once we get through that. And let me just correct myself, too. I got the two Joshes confused. So the other Josh, I forgot, he's a strip club frequenter. So, yeah, he's got to tell his wife when he's not going, when he's going fishing anyway.
Well, do you have one of those little, they look like a straw for filtering water? I've always got one of those. Got one in my tackle box. Yeah. Because down here, everything's salt water.
What is it?
They make them in cups, but they also make them, it looks like a big straw, and you can suck water out of the river, and it filters all the bacteria and junk out.
Yeah, no, I don't have one of those. Like I said, I mean, we're pretty much, you know, I mean, I usually don't go solo, and where we're at, we're in, like, Bush River, Susquehanna, you know, even if we're, like, Key Bridge, Art Miller Island, there's somewhere to get to shore, rescue, no matter what.
I think the coolest thing about you guys is just all the diversity and all the different fishing that you guys do. It's just really cool to watch you guys one day catch smallmouth, next day catch blue cats, next day catch snakeheads, next day, you know what I mean?
And that's the fun.
That's what I remember us as here. As kids. I mean, we chased it all, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the fun. Like, I don't know. I think that did you share the ice picture with me and a guy in a red suit?
I sure did, and he's floating too.
Your cousin broke the ice that morning.
No doubt.
For us to get over there to go perch fishing. We only caught one perch, but your cousin was there that morning.
Who was it, Ricky?
Yep. Yeah, he'll remember that picture.
Yeah, so
the ice up, and then we almost got iced in coming back out.
Oh, I can tell you some stories about him now. That some bitch almost got me locked up a couple times going places she ain't supposed to. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, I think it was him and Donald.
Yep. Dude, oh, yes, Donald, it was him and Donald Jones. I remember that trip. Yep. I sure do. Yep. I remember he called me and said, there's ice. I said, well, bust it up and go. He said, okay.
Yep, and we followed him across. He I never knew the that. River for us. Yep. Yeah, that was cool.
That is awesome.
I think that was the first time I actually met Donald Jones.
I'll tell you what, he's a character. I want to get him on here one day too, man. He's something else, I'll tell you. Yeah. So we've covered all the safety stuff. So let's talk about let's touch on the feel free thing, you know. So you got that going on. Let's talk a little bit about kayaks. Let's talk about just feel free, since that's who you're representing now. You know, if I'm new, I'm new to the sport.
I represent them.
Yep. So that's what I'm saying. I'm new to the sport, Roy. I'm reaching out to you. I like the feel free line. I like what I'm seeing. I weigh about 180 pounds, and I want to go fishing. Roy, what feel free could you suggest to me that might be a good choice?
Well, feel free has like 20 kayaks available in that range. So first off, what do you want? Do you want a paddle kayak? Do you want a pedal kayak? Do you want a kayak you can probably put a motor on and you know, be super efficient.
I like these motor modifications everybody's
I'm not throwing my spots out there, but yeah, I mean, we're going 5 miles to one location to fish. Right. You know, there's a reason we go and there's nobody else with us.
In a kayak, 5 miles. That's a hell of a paddle
you know? That's one way. Like, you could probably guess the spots, but it's one way.
Right.
But yeah, honestly, they have everything available. They have everything from, you know, you can walk into a pedal kayak for $1,400 or $1,500, I believe.
That's a pretty good price.
The cheapest.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's not just feel free. It's feel free, Sea Stream, Big Fish. They have the Johnny Boat, which is basically kind of a plastic John Boat thing. You can throw a gas motor on. A couple little new things coming with that this year, which I'm not allowed to say yet, but.
Don't you like that when you have to keep secrets and you just can't tell anybody and tell you something and you just want to tell? I mean, I've had like 5 lures from big manufacturers this year sent to me. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to share this. No, you put that on Facebook, you're fired.
Like, I just released a little teaser about the big, I'm on a Big Fish 108, which is an absolute.
That was going to be my question. Roy, what are you in?
I'm in a Big Fish 108 right now. I have a lure 11.5.
Okay.
I mean, my 108 is a beast. It'll go anywhere. It has more potential than I'm afraid that I can use. I'll be honest. I've had it out in 3-footers out at Hart and Miller in a windstorm. It's just no issues at all. We're just fishing, having fun, laughing.
That sounds hairy to me, man.
Yeah, I don't know about all that.
Although I've been in Conowingo Lake in a canoe with 3-foot swells.
I've been in another 3-foot swells.
There was a story, people almost died at, you know, 100,000 CFS in the river. I know where to go. You can still fish it.
Right.
You can still fish it in a kayak.
Right.
You didn't know where you go and your limits and the flow on the river. You know, I've been there long enough that, you know, I'm not going above lapping them, you know, over 50K.
Right.
But, you know, I'll go down below the river in 100K.
You know what I did one day? I got to tell you a little story. It just made me think about, you know, I put in lapping them and I just bought this Bass Tracker. This was, I don't know, 10 years ago, I guess, maybe more. And I think, I'm trying to remember who was with me, man. I think it might have been Paul Mullins. I can't remember, but might have been Paul Radcliffe, actually. We were going up the river and I took the bass boat that I just bought all the way up to Deer Creek, and it was high water. So I got up there, you know what I mean? Yeah. We're sitting there fishing, having a good time, man. I'm holding us in this little pool with my trolling motor. We're catching smallmouth, white perch, all kinds of stuff. All of a sudden they shut the dam down, man. Oh man, yep. you want to talk
Have
about
fun.
Freaking out, dude. Oh my God. Yeah. Look, I had this boat 7 hours from Bass Pro Shop, brand new, and when we pulled out lapping them, it had about 9 or 10, and when I say dents, I mean dents in that son of a bitch, man.
I'm very familiar with the whole area you just spoke of. And
gotta
low water, you're not doing it. You know, that's the fun on the kayaks. That's what it is for me. It's just, you know, yeah, we gotta pick where we go, pick our launch locations, but man, we do some crazy stuff. Like, if you saw my GPS map on my depth finder, it's gray. I literally have to clear it this year. That the areas you talk, I've been in every inch.
Right.
Like up in your mom's neighborhood, yeah. All them little creeks, yeah. All them little holes up in Isaac Walton.
But there ain't none up there, though, you know? There's
no steakhead there. No. I'm not saying anything. I'm just telling you, I've been there.
I mean, so.
Like, when I say West Side Snakes, you know, I started as a fun joke. Oh, we got snakehead. Something cool to start. But,
right.
Like, when I say the crew we go with, we've covered last year, I think, well, the one guy's GPS kind of went in the water. Hey, Todd Burnett, just saying hello because I know you're listening. His last count was 400 miles.
Wow.
That we covered, and that was mid-season or towards the end of the season, and he dropped his depth finder in the water, so that was our last count. So we probably have 600 miles just covering.
Gosh, that's amazing.
Local creeks from the Key Bridge to the Susquehanna. So, wow. That, Kaz, you know the area?
Oh yeah.
I can tell you how much we've covered. People say I was here. I can look at a tree and go, "Yep, I know exactly where you are."
Right? I can
there's,
too.
There's no secret.
I can.
There's
too.
No secret.
Me and you. I mean, I can tell you. I know that just me and you. That's all we did, man. I mean, we either rode our skateboard, yeah, or we were fishing, yeah, or we were kissing girls. I mean, it was pretty simple, you know.
That's kind of like down here, same way. There's not many places I haven't been in these creeks down here.
Are you trying to say that's all you're doing is kissing girls too?
You see like a bird's nest or a tree, or you see a lure hanging from a tree, and it's like, yep, I know exactly where you were.
Or a power line positioned on the horizon. You know?
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, let's talk about the Upper Bay, you know, what you like to fish for, or what's been going on up there. I mean, tell the folks, you know, how they can get in touch with you, you know, how they might be able to get with you on an adventure or something like that. And let's talk about what you guys are catching up there.
It's been slow. I'll be honest. Perch are, water's 36 degrees. Yellows should be there. They're not there. Hmm. I mean, you're catching small. It's the same thing you guys were saying. It is. I mean, I'm not getting into that whole argument, but they're just not there. Since the flood a couple of years ago, striper migration's been slow.
Right.
White, you know, everything's been slow.
You know, I've been talking to some friends in up in Gray's Run that are netting up in that direction, and you know, I talked to one guy today, and he said they haven't seen any. They're seeing a few yellow perch, but.
Yeah,
you know, in three years, you know, the numbers from what he's telling me, you know, like you're saying, you know, maybe it's the flooding thing or whatever, but
yeah,
the numbers have come down, and you know, I mean, I don't know. Gray's Run and Bush Creek were two of my favorite places to just get away and hide at during the day. You know what I mean?
Yep. Well, I know exactly where you're talking. I know we kayak all those places, you know, Church Creek, the whole area. I'm very familiar with the whole area, and it's just slow. It's ever since. I don't know, you know, if it's snakehead. I noticed the decline, I guess it's 3 years ago, 2 years ago, three years ago at this point, that big flood.
That's what I would say, too, after that.
And after that, everything changed. Everything changed in the Susquehanna. The striper migration, the shad. Right. I mean, I fished for every species. Everything changed after that year.
I mean, I think about the migration of the snakeheads in the river, and I'm not going to get into good or bad or anything like that. But I look at up Deep Creek or Deer Creek, you know, how far up there. I've got friends that are catching them up there at 543 trout fishing, you know. So
yep.
I got friends over in the Octorara that they're all the way up to the dam. I've had a couple people tell me that they're in the lake, but I haven't seen anything except to tell me anything as far as Octorara goes, as far as that goes. Regardless, yeah, we're talking about that flood, and this is a thought that I had also. You know, we knew those snakeheads were coming in there 5 years ago, especially into the gunpowder complex, you know, yep. Anyway. And then we had that flood kind of come through. We had that high water, and I don't know, but it seemed like the following year, the snakehead numbers kind of came down in some of the areas where I saw them, but were showing up other areas where they weren't before. So I think that when we had that flood thing happen up there, that really spread a bunch of snakeheads around. And then I think the last 2 years, you know, we've just had some very conducive time for spawning. So the reproduction has been amazing. Here's, you know, we might as well just be honest. It's been amazing how many have popped out in 2 years, you know. So
I have a spot, and I'm not going to obviously say anything. We went there, and every single time, 50 to 100 fry ball with both parents on them, nobody around. Yeah. Just loaded.
That's how it was here. I mean, at Key Wallace, when them fry balls hit here, you can go over Key Wallace, and I mean, it's nothing. It's as far as you can see, man. You know, it's just like God.
Here's what concerns me: is the population, like Middle River. I'll be honest. I mean, I posted 1,000 fish. Middle River. We caught 100 fish in 3 months. I did personally 100 fish, just playing around, learning.
Wow,
100 fish, 3 months. Every cast, you know, you're seeing schools of them. People say they don't school.
Oh, I know they school. I watch them. I watch them how they corral shad together, you know.
I watched it. It looked like a scraper blowing up me. And I sat there and threw on MEPS and just every cast. There's pictures. One of those pictures, all those snakehead on my boat. That's what it was. What concerns me is we just had another flood.
Yep.
We had another flood, and all those baby snakehead that are everywhere just expanded. They didn't get washed away. they figured that out.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. When they see the thing that we learned this year up at the con, and we go, damn, just from studying and things like that, you know, the fish were smart enough to get on the other side of the west wing wall. You know what I mean? The fish were smart enough that they knew when the water was calm to go over there and lay. I mean, I've got videos of friend walking down that west wing wall with a video camera with pair after pair after pair after pair after pair of guiding fry balls. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then as far as you can look out there in that whole pool area, you can see them in every pool, you know? And then they open the water and it pushes them back down. And I just think, because I give credit to the snakehead as being a very brilliant and smart fish. So I think they know, hey, we got to this dam. We couldn't go any further. Now we just got washed back down. Let's try a different route. So then they're scooting to the right and going up Octorara. You know what I mean? Because they know not to take my babies back there to the dam. Let me take them somewhere where I'm not going to deal with this again, you know?
Yep.
That's the thing about these fish. I mean, they are really, really smart. I mean, they are just intelligent,
smart.
You know?
They're smart. They're smart. I've sat days on end. I've taken people out that haven't got it. That's my thing, is kind of invite people. I will always be that person. You want to come fish, and I'll try and put you on a fish. It's not about catching for me.
Right.
But I've sat and watched fish come up and know they are threatened. I've had guys on fry balls, which I don't take it or leave, you know, like it or not. I don't target fry ball fish that much.
It's fine.
But I've taken guys, do you want to catch a fish? And I've watched parents move their fry ball.
Yep.
Like, no, this frog is somebody's catching or trying to catch them or injure them.
Not just
and
that.
And they move and herd their fish.
Not just that, but I can tell you, and this is God's honest truth, you know, we were doing the same thing with some pairs on fry balls with frogs and spinners, like you're saying. And it wasn't that they didn't want to necessarily hit the bait. They wanted to know first where the bait was coming from. So it was almost like one of those parents would follow that bait out 20 yards and then turn around and go back, you know, and then you throw again and that other parent might come out and chase it and then go right back, you know? So memory, as far as these fish go, and we've proved it in some of the data we've collected as far as color memory and things like that. The memory is amazing, and the memory is not like short-term memory. Their memory is actually pretty long-term. Like, they remembered 3 weeks into a study colors, you know? So, you know, I agree with you, you know? It's a pretty smart fish. I mean, we're pretty – I don't know whether we're lucky or not to have the opportunity to fish for them and catch them. I mean, I have that – that 50-50 split in me, you know what I mean? I love them, I hate them, you know?
That's right. You know? It doesn't matter anymore. They're here.
Right.
That's it.
They're here. They're going to stay. But our other, you know, our local fish, our resident fish are in danger.
You got to watch what you call them.
We all know that. We all admit it. Yellow perch, white perch, shad, stray perch. If they're in danger, let's just – the snakehead are here. They're exploding. Let's just have fun. Let's just – you want to keep them? Keep them. You don't let them go. You're not hurting the population. The bowfish are like bitches about them.
You know
honestly,
me.
They're not hurting the population.
Right. I've always said.
They might knock it down a quick minute, but they're not. They're not getting in there on the high tide and them fish are 80 yards in the woods.
I like the way you're keeping it pretty real, too. You know what I mean? I mean, the bottom line is this. They're here to stay. They're not going anywhere. And if we can be proactive, or if we see something like I've said, I mean, we see what's happened here, and it could be a totally different ball game. You know what I'm saying? But what we've seen, in the Potomac, in the areas that we are doing data collection, says something completely different. You know,
everything. We're all still learning,
right?
I mean, even the biologists are still learning.
Yeah.
I've talked to them. You know, I talk to people just like you do. We're all still learning what's going on, but I agree, they're moving. Like, I know little creeks. I Google map Harford County, Cecil County, Baltimore County. I look at every crook, nook, cranny. That's why I have
every time
miles on my kayak. Like, there's creeks that concern me. That if the water's too high and enough fish move in there, the population, once they're there, they're established.
Yep.
That's done. Yeah. That's settled.
Yeah.
Like Deer Creek. You know, there's a few dams, but on a high water situation, are they going to get above Eden Mill?
Well, that,
you know, there's
that,
a mill with a tunnel. They get above there, it's over. Deer Creek's over. The pretty boy. It's over.
Well, that, you know,
trophy class trout fishing. Done.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing, like, the state's trying to figure out what do we do now? Do we continue to stock places with trout? Do we continue to spend the money, you know, to build a fishery for somebody to enjoy with their $5 trout stamp? Is it going to, or, you know, so these are things that they're concerned about at this time as far as these trout streams go, you know? And then I look at places So not to get into it, but I do know there's some places in PA where they've shown up, and I do know that I know that some of these places
you don't have to do that.
Yeah, I mean, like up around the Hanover area and, those places like that with those natural brookie streams and, they're not big fish. Trout. They're just fun.
They're natural. They're not stocked.
Yeah, and it's also, they're migratory fish because they're from places where they have the monsoons. And when it rains 3 or 4 days down here, they're everywhere. I mean, literally, when the roads.
I really want to bring you down here one day with me and just take you on a flood day in the summertime and just show you what these roads look like.
You see a few carp doing that. Now it's the carp are still there, but the snakeheads are more than the carp. But they do. They travel, and they'll go to the headwaters as far as they can go. And that's a dangerous thing when you get high water, because that just puts them everywhere.
Puts them in your backyard.
I've watched them learn. I mean, we sat at Jones Road at Gunpowder. We have a friend of mine has video, and they're with like the little mud cats, the baby mud cats, and they're just burrowed down under them, keeping warm. And I know, there was video of them. They're swimming up over the dam at Jones Road.
Yep.
They're going through the falls. You know, they're in the Gunpowder.
Well, they're in Loch Raven. I mean, they're established in Loch Raven.
Yeah, they're in Loch Raven. So. Yeah, they've been up below that dam for years. No, and now they're up.
They're up in the reservoir now for sure. And they've been, like you said, below the dam for probably 5, 6, 7 years anyway. You know.
Yep. Yeah, and they make it up Deer Creek. I'm not going to burn spots, but there's a lot of little feeder creeks that come off of there.
Yep.
That are full of little local brown trout.
Yep, I know.
And they get above that Edenville. That's what scares me is. Local populations of little browns, they're just gone. They're gone. They're going to be decimated. I've lived up here for the last 15 years.
And the only reason that I think that you're probably not incorrect in that assumption is that I look at our ditches here and what's happened to our ditches that connect to all the places here in Blackwater. And, I can realistically tell you that, if you drive down 335 or you walk down 335 or in the summertime anymore, there's no frogs in these ditches. These were places that we went and got bait to go bass fishing. So that's how we know, we go down these ditches, get our crawfish, get our frogs, take them back in Blackwater and use them for bait, Now all those places where we got our frogs and we got our crayfish, they're not there. They're not even there. That's the thing,
A few leopard frogs, but no bullfrogs.
Yeah, I mean, the frogs that we do see here now locally, let's just say in like the Blackwater area and anything close to the refuge itself is mostly tree frogs and like you said, leopard frogs.
That's about it.
Every now and then you'll see a green frog, but like you get near them ditches or you get into them places, you don't see those. When you do see something like that, you see them in a little puddle in the woods somewhere, where they've been able to stay and not have any kind of a problem,
Like we were talking earlier, that Otter Creek, and the post I'm responding to, the 40 ponds, it's snakehead are in there.
Oh, I know.
I know that too, but you can go look and there's drainage ditches that run off of Otter. Yes, they're shallow. I know the whole area. I've mapped this entire county, every county.
I got.
They run into one. Yep. They overflow, runs across that little off ramp into the other. Those fish are there. Like you might not catch them, you might not find them. They're there.
I've caught them, and I've got pictures. I've got pictures of me.
Golf course that's in the woods. They're there.
I've got pictures of me on the corner last year or 2 years ago. I think it was 2 years ago because I think I sent the pictures to Greg Hall because we were having a conversation about it. And I told him, I caught some there. And he said, I've seen it a million times. I've never caught them, blah, blah, blah. And then I sent the picture either to him or to somebody. But you can see the power lines behind me, the tree line, the road and everything. I got it's not a big snakehead. It's like maybe a 12-incher or something like that.
It's probably the little ones migrating.
I have not caught anything big in there because, like I said earlier, I think that the birds that use it, the eagles, the ospreys when they're here and things like that, I think I've watched them ospreys dive in there and they don't pick up little fish. When they pick up something, it's usually a turtle or something that's got some kind of size to it. So maybe those other birds or things that are coming in there to eat, maybe they're picking off bigger fish. I don't know, but I haven't seen anything in there really over 14-15 inches. But I can tell I had a day,
like a breeding ground.
I had one day there. It was I probably caught 13 of them and 15 casts on a little Joe's fly, and they were all 4 to maybe 8 inches big. That's all they were, most of them. But like I said, the biggest one I got is the picture
areas,
I sent.
They're finding like a nursery that they just, my fry are good, and they leave. And I've been around certain areas, and we targeted like some big paired up fish, and they would get targeted, you know, by the next trip. The parents were gone. The fry ball's still there. And we watched those little white birds, I guess they're pipers or something, just decimate a fry ball. Like, just sit there for hours just attacking this fry ball. No parents. The parents were gone, and just decimate them. But I think the snakehead are actually migrating to find a place to raise their – that's how smart.
100%. You know,
okay, that's a muddy, shallow water, warm area. They'll be good. Once they're big enough, the parents roll out.
I know at Key Wallace, you know, it seemed like what you're saying here, you know, it seemed like that they were getting more and more in Key Wallace as the time went on, because it was a big bay area that they could get in there and they could get away from the bridges and they could sit with the fry out there, things like that. So I agree with you that, you know, if opportunity presents itself and they see a better opportunity, they're certainly going for it. And looking at some of the – I Google a lot of things and look at a lot of the scientific studies and a lot of the theses and the hypotheses that they're putting in some of these colleges, and some of these kids are grabbing these snakehead studies and going with it. And, I mean, you can see, you know, in some of that there that – The adaptation anyway, you know what I mean? And you can see from what they're saying and some of the studies that they've done that, you know, when they have snakeheads and they make the water very unfavorable, or they take, like, so one of the studies they did at California was they had an area of water, I forget how many acres it was. One half of the water was something, the other half was something else. And when they had put the water pH or whatever on one side of this area higher, the fish were smart enough to move to the other side. So I agree with you. You know, if a snakehead's in an area and they don't feel it's conducive to raising their fry, or maybe a necessary good breeding area, they've learned, you know, a lesson once or twice having babies, that, yeah, I think definitely they're going to be smart enough to try to look somewhere else for a new home.
It's like what they do in the Blackwater.
Yeah.
And it used to be you'd see them out in the river all the time. Now, as soon as the water gets high enough, they take the young right up in the Phragmites where you can't get to them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then it'll come out until the tide falls.
Yep.
Well,
that outgoing tide is key. Like, anybody listening that wants to go fishing for them, catch that off the high, outgoing at the mouth of a creek.
Yep. And then for here, if we've got a low tide and it's sunny, you know, and you've got that tide just coming back in, a lot of times you can get them on the turn too, because that water that's covering that area that might be exposed is a little bit warmer from the sun being on it. So that water hits it, jumps up 5 or 6 or 10 degrees. You know what I mean?
Water warms up way quicker.
Yep. Our water here literally today could be 36 in the morning. We could have sun this afternoon. We'll be up close to 50 by the evening. Then overnight, we may fall back into, say, 45. And then tomorrow, we have sun in the afternoon, and we're pushing 60.
Yeah.
I don't know what the water temperature was today, but with all the sun that we had this afternoon here, and I've already said it, you know, I think tomorrow is going to be a good day, and I think Saturday is going to be a good day. So we'll see if I caught it right again. Butch, look, man, we're here at an hour. We're getting where we need to be. Is there anything out there that we haven't talked about that you want anybody to know about you, safety, Westside Snacks, anything like that? I noticed that you've made a post here recently about you guys thinking about putting together some tournaments or some fun stuff like that.
That's one thing I want to tap on, is just real quick. Everything's way still in the works. It will be coming this spring. A few little kind of what the local bass guys do, just run and go. Little trips, nothing like crazy extravagant or anything like that. Just run and gun online tournaments will be coming to the West Side. Multiple bays, they will be hosted just because of everything. Angler's choice. You keep them, you kill them, I don't care. That's your choice.
How can people find Roy, and on what platforms do you want to give a little plug to that you've got some stuff going on?
I can't think of them all.
I know you got a couple, so.
Yeah, I'm pretty much focused on the Facebook stuff is right now. I'm Roy Boyd Jr. on Facebook, Locked and Loaded.
That was the new one. Okay.
That's my new one. It's feel free thing. It's kind of sponsor thing. It's the pages are the pages, but I need to do something personal.
Sure.
Westside Snakes and Lower Susquehanna Outdoors. I kind of went diversified on. I've got my hand in everything, and who knows where it's going, but whatever.
Well, that's kind of like us. We've got our hands in a bunch of shit. We're just hoping something works out.
Yeah, it's basically the rules are just come hang out, have fun. You know, no Don't start arguing, doing all that drama. Right. You know, it's all fishing.
I mean, the bottom line is we all just need to respect one another, no matter what we feel or where we're at. Name calling, point finger pointing, that doesn't do anybody good. Being racial and making racial statements, that doesn't do anybody any good. Name calling, none of it's any good. So
that's what I'll say about the pages that even they're not that huge, they're small. But you know what? It's fun. You can sit there and joke with people. You know, you can bust balls, but. You know, it doesn't go to that level.
Right.
Everybody understands.
I tell you what, you guys have done a great job. I mean, I can't say any more than that. I mean, you guys have done a great job.
Honestly, openly, because I know people are watching, Kaz, thank you for everything, brother. Seriously.
Welcome. You're welcome.
Seriously. Through life, thank you for everything, brother.
I appreciate that. I don't think that you realize what that means to hear.
No,
especially just coming from you, you know. I mean, I catch a lot of flack for a lot of stuff, you know. But my heart's good, you know. I've always been pretty pure with what I'm trying to do, you know. So
I know who you are. Just thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Hey, I'm glad that we're still here. You know, I'm 46. You're what, 48, I think, or 49?
I'm 50.
50. Okay, so he's 50. That's why I was cutting school when you were so far.
Feeling better all the time, man.
Man, you're
been a banner day for me, man.
You're putting Gary on high self, man. You know. So now I'm really looking forward to getting you down here and spending a day with you. I told you, you know, my door is always open for you, especially if you need a getaway or you want to come down. Just escape some craziness or whatever. Just want to come down here and shoot some guns for something to do. I don't care.
Awesome, man.
Just let me know what you want to do. Go ahead. I do want to talk about, I wanted to ask you this. So if you had to pick your five favorite lures for snakehead fishing.
Oh, go ahead.
Let us hear it. What would be five lures
that
you could think, instead of three, and everybody says three, let's talk five, you know? So
I'll do five. No grass, if you can fish it, MEPS. MEPS 5 white, my favorite. Number one go-to. 5 or 4 white, silver blade, white. Subsurface, addiction baits, blue, swim chatter. My God, that thing is fire, I don't care what anybody says.
Hold on, Gary. Gary's going to hold some.
Is that him?
Can you see us on Facebook? Is that the one you use?
What's that?
Are you on Facebook?
I don't have Facebook.
Okay.
It's the blue swim chatter. Yeah, swing chatter.
Gary's holding one up. And then so that's two. Give us some more.
My Indonesian frogs from my buddy Alvin.
give Alvin a little plug. Give Alvin a little plug. What's his company name? Give him a little shout out.
It's Gamma Bait. He's based out of Indonesia, and, man, it's like talking to those guys. Man, snakehead passion, I just reached out across the world. And
I'll tell you what, you look at some of these pages in the other countries, and they're amazing, man. They really, really are.
Like, the guy's like 20, you know, they're 20 years old, and they build baits to live. And they put so much passion. I mean, it's little, tiny, you know, it's once I switch to those little baits, the snakehead work, it's just every cast.
Okay, that's three.
Four. Man.
It's hard. I know it is, man. I get the same way. How about frogs? How about the mice? How about the
hard
baits, wake baits?
Small baits. I don't do much wake bait, to be honest with you. I mean, that's like literally I carry four rods with me, and that's my three baits that are loaded, and they don't seem to work. Swims, you know,
there you go, swim baits.
Yep, S&S baits, blade swim. You got the blade with a 3 to 5 inch swim on the back. Absolutely.
And
a tight position.
And I'm holding up one of the SS buzz baits right now so people can see that as we're talking.
S&S buzz, man. I mean, you know, Trong is the man. I mean, quality baits. You want to talk about quality swims or baits or, man. You're not breaking a wire.
I think that's the biggest thing that people are looking for, especially in the snakehead sport, is quality and beef. So that's four. Yeah. I need five. Give me one more.
Give you one more.
Dynamite.
I'm digging deep here. Yeah. I'll tell you what. I haven't used it yet, but the new let me pull the box out. It's Brady Phelps is importing some new frogs, and I'm kind of pumped.
I saw them. The Chanadai thing or whatever?
Chanadai, yes. Yeah. Chanadai.
Yeah.
I have a picture of them, but yes, I'm, I really pumped about using those this year. It's the bill, small blade bait, topwater frog.
I'll tell you what, I've seen his stuff. That is some gorgeous stuff. I'm looking forward to ordering some myself. I said something to Eddie about getting them here in the store, too, man, you know?
I switched those little, talking to those Indonesian guys. Now, I waited the first edition that I got imported from Alvin. I put a little weight for casting. But it's just, it's insane. I mean, it's just almost like they're not afraid or threatened by the bait. They just attack these little tiny small frogs.
And see, that's something that I have touted for a long time, and it's the lure that I'm going to hold up right now, and it's the pocket frog for me. You know, so these little pocket frogs, like I've been telling these guys down here, not just for the ditches, but even those big fish out there, when they get finicky and they get picky and they've got pressure on them, sometimes you and me both know the whole downsizing game. You know, that works like you wouldn't believe.
That's the ditch frog right there, man. Yeah. When you get in those ditches, when I'm hunting, man, they're slamming the frogs behind me at the edge of dark.
And I just want to talk about a couple of different lures here before we close out, you know. And, you know, talking about S&S again, here's the buzz baits again, and I've got three in my hand right there, and those are pretty much my go-to colors on that. And I think the first lure that you even mentioned, Roy, was MEPS. So
speaking of MEPS, you know, we got our
the MEPS are here too. Yeah, we got an angler spotlight of the week this week. Who's on that MEPS angler of the spotlight of the week?
Blake Sutherland.
That was a big bass, wasn't it? He caught. And I think that was down here on the Eastern Shore, too, if I remember correctly.
I'm not sure where he called it.
So you said MEPS, you said that. I'll tell you another bait that I like, I want to talk about real quick, is Megafrox. I like the Megafrox, the jump baits, things like that. You know, John's got a hell of a product out there. I mean, even the spinner baits. I mean, guys, you know, they love spinner baits. Honestly, I mean, they really like, and I think you agree too, Roy, you know, terminal bass tackle, but the bass tackle out here just isn't strong enough, you know. The rats, you know, this is one of my more favorite wake baits here, you know, is the rats. And then what else do we got here? The elastics. Want to talk about hyperelastics, right? Yep. So this is Eddie, and this is my cousin. You met Ricky. This is the only lure that he throws anymore here at Blackwater, I swear to God.
You caught your personal best on one, didn't
I? I did. I caught my PB on a hyperelastic.
So these hyperelastics, it's a plastic that's just, I mean, it's durable, man. You know, it holds up really, really good, and that spinner on the back works good. And make sure that you've got your number one-aught Eagle Claw bait holder hooks right there. You know, that's something that you want to have too. So, you know, a lot of new stuff, Eddie. I mean, I'd like to just mention that we've got about a tractor trailer load of lures downstairs that we've got to put up on the shelves. So for anybody who's looking to come down and get some early shopping done before the snakehead craze kicks off in late February, March, might want to get down here next week or two.
At least let me get it on the shelf first.
Man, hey, why you want to handle it twice? You want to handle it once, right? And Guy told me that one day, you know? So before we go, I just want to take a minute. Again, I want to thank Butch, and, you know, I want to thank you for coming on here today and helping us. And, you know, you probably saved somebody's life today and they don't know it yet, you know? So that's...
Hey, thank you guys at Blackwater's Edge. You guys are doing an incredible job, honestly. Thank you.
And look, we'll be in touch with you soon. And like I said, the door is open. You let me know when you want to come down here. And when you get these tournaments going, you let me know. I'd like to help you in any way that we can. We'll help you with advertising. We'll do whatever we can to give you support. That's what we're here for.
Take you out in this dirty water.
Sounds good.
Yeah, you come down here. Gary will put you on the mud boat. You can have fun driving across the mud out there.
You don't know they're there until they hit the line.
That's right.
You can't say nothing.
Well, any more one mores?
No one mores for me.
Gary?
I'm good.
Anything else you could think of, Roy? Or are we good?
I'm good, man.
I'm going to sing a little song for you. You ready?
Sounds good.
For all you out there, you know what it's going to be about. It's going to be about crabs. And look, you know, I'm coming up the road tomorrow with some jumbo fresh shrimp out of the Atlantic Ocean. Fresh, fresh, fresh. When I say fresh, we're meeting the trawlers right now down in South Carolina as we speak to load the trucks and bring them up the road with some fresh shrimps for you guys. Fat Ass brand, that's what we sell. And look, when it comes to crabs, when it comes to seafood, there's only one place that you want to go, and it's the Crab Stand, home of the guaranteed number one Maryland crab. My crabs, they have three first names. It's Heavy, Full, and Fat. My crabs, they have a fourth name. Absolutely Mustard Packed! So, if you ask me or Roy where they're from, They're 100% guaranteed Maryland number ones, number ones. Hey, West Side Snakes is number one, too. At the crab stand, here's a fact I knew for sure we're coming back. Kapow! Kapow! Kapow!